She's a research fellow in anesthesia at Harvard Medical School and also a research affiliate at MIT. She's a postdoctoral research fellow at MGH as well, and working in groups of Emery Brown and Matt Wilson, has been doing a lot of pioneering work using new technologies and new approaches to study consciousness, anesthesia, and sleep. So the title of her talk today will be Optogenetic Activation of Cholinergic Neurons in the PPT Induces REM Sleep.
Great. Thank you for that. So I'm going to talk to you today about the neural networks involved in the regulation of sleep. And so there's two main types of sleep, non-REM and REM, and we can identify those based on their electrophysiological characteristics. So here we have a trace of wakefulness showing fast frequency, low amplitude EEG. This is the surface recording. And then we combine that with looking at muscle activity and can tell that this animal is awake. In non-REM, we have slow waves and delta activity and a low muscle tone. And then with REM sleep, which is the dream sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, we get another, at least in animals, very strong theta activity and low muscle tone. And so what's the importance of sleep? We all kind of know sleep is important. Some of the hypothesized theories of sleep are that it's important for energy conservation, for memory consolidation and plasticity, executive function, cellular maintenance and repair, optimal interaction with the environment, or maintaining normal regulation of the immune function, cardiovascular system, and metabolism. And so there's 60 million people that suffer from sleep disorders that disrupt normal sleep. And current medications don't reproduce natural sleep patterns or physiology, and therefore do not restore all the normal functions of sleep. So these current non-benzodiazepine, benzodiazepine binding site drugs like Zolpidem and Lunesta Ambien, they enhance global GABAergic transmission in the brain, but do not target the specific sleep pathways. And so you get lighter sleep and suppressed REM sleep, but not kind of the restorative deep slow waves or REM sleep patterns that you would normally have to feel restored. So therefore, there's a need for more selective targeted drugs that can be developed to target these sleep pathways. And to find these targets, we're understanding the components of the systems. And so therefore, I'm taking two approaches that I'll tell you about today to figure out how to generate and understand the circuits involved in REM and non-REM sleep. So first, I'll tell you about the contribution of cholinergic neurons in the brainstem to REM sleep generation, and then how the alpha-2 adrenergic agonist dexmedetomidine produces a state that's similar to natural non-REM sleep. So this is a schematic of the important areas in the brain involved in sleep regulation. So we have in blue the monoaminergic nuclei that are part of the ascending reticular activating system that activate the cortex, as well as in green the cholinergic nuclei. And then in red here, we have the preoptic area, which is one of the key areas that's currently hypothesized to be active for non-REM sleep to occur. So this is inhibitory projections to all of these other arousal-promoting areas, so such that when the preoptic area turns on, it inhibits the rest of the arousal system and puts your brain to sleep. Now, for the transition to REM, for REM sleep to occur, one of the current hypotheses is that activation of the cholinergic neurons in the brainstem turn back on and then activate the cortex, but the monoaminergic nuclei stay off and actually even turn off further for REM sleep to occur. And so I'm testing the hypothesis that these cholinergic neurons are involved in REM sleep generation. So some of the evidence that this might be true comes from injection studies of cholinergic agonists in the pontine reticular formation, which is a projection site of that LDT and PPT that I showed in the diagram, that produce a REM-like state in the cat. And this can also be produced in the rats and mice and rodents, but the exact location of the injection is a little bit more variable and has a little bit of a less robust effect. So you can also block the breakdown of acetylcholine in this pontine reticular formation site, which will increase REM sleep. However, lesioning of the LDT and PPT, these two cholinergic nuclei, has produced more variable effects. In cat, it has a more reliable decrease in REM sleep, but in rats, there's been various findings depending on which group is reporting it. In addition, chronic low-intensity electrical stimulation of the LDT can increase the time spent in REM sleep. Now, these lesion studies that have induced variable results where there's not as much of an effect on REM sleep have led to alternate hypotheses that involve GABAergic neurons in the brainstem and have kind of discounted the role of cholinergic neurons. So, therefore, despite this evidence of cholinergic REM sleep induction, nobody's directly tested this hypothesis, and now we have the ability with optogenetics to actively go in and control the firing pattern of specifically the cholinergic neurons in this area. So, therefore, I'm testing the hypothesis that activation of cholinergic neurons in the PPT is sufficient to induce REM sleep. So, what do we know about how these neurons fire normally? There's been studies in cat that have recorded these neurons across the sleep-wake cycle, and we find two populations of neurons. One population that's active during wakefulness and REM sleep, and another population that's selectively active during REM sleep. And so these neurons are both cholinergic and involved in this activation of the cortex, which is seen in both REM sleep and wakefulness. And to do this, I've used optogenetics. I used a transgenic mouse developed by Gaoping Fang that expresses channel rhodopsin in cholinergic neurons. And we implanted the mice with bilateral fiber optics aimed to target above the PPT so that the light would go down into the PPT, as well as EEG and EMG recording electrodes so that we could score the sleep state of the animal. And we used the transgenic mice that were positive as the experimental condition and the transgenic mice that were not expressing the wild-type siblings of those mice as the control. Each animal got three different conditions of duration of stimulation. If we look back at what frequency do these cholinergic neurons fire at, these wake and REM-on neurons fire around 3 hertz, and these REM-on neurons fire around 5 hertz. So we chose, if we were interested in REM sleep, to fire these neurons at 5 hertz. So we had 5 hertz stimulation at 60, 80, or 180 second durations. And here's an example. We waited for the animal to go into non-REM sleep naturally. So this animal is in non-REM sleep. And then here's marking the 5 hertz stimulations of turning on these neurons, and you'll see a progressive shift from delta power to theta power, and that turns the animal into REM sleep. And this lasts beyond the stimulation and extends the duration of each REM sleep episode. And so you can see very low muscle tone and the theta activity in the EEG. And eventually he wakes up, and you'll be able to see a clear increase in muscle tone. That's a phasic event of REM sleep. And then here he's waking up. And so if we look at this over time, we can see that the mouse is in non-REM sleep based on the spectrogram of the EEG and the EMG. We turn on the optogenetic stimulation, and in this case, in about 20 seconds, we get a transition into this theta activity and the characteristic low muscle tone of REM sleep, and that extends a little bit beyond the stimulation, and then the animal wakes up, which is quite common that the animals wake up out of REM sleep. If we look at the group data for this experiment, we can see in the black bars, the channel rhodopsin positive animals have a progressive increase in REM sleep with an increase in the duration of the stimulation compared to their wild type litter mates. So we're seeing that activation of these cholinergic neurons in the PPT is able to induce an increase in REM sleep. And then you can ask, well, what is this state physiologically like REM sleep? So we looked at the power spectrum of this in this induced state, and we can see that it has very similar theta activity and power spectrum to the natural non-REM sleep or natural REM sleep. And so this is at the expense of non-REM sleep. So the animals were in non-REM sleep when we turned on the stimulation, and then they transitioned to REM sleep. they did wake up sometimes, but there was not a significant difference between the control and the experimental group in wakefulness. So we confirmed that these neurons were able to follow our 5 hertz stimulation pattern. So in the top, we have a 5 millisecond light pulse, and we see rapid onset action potentials 7 or 8 milliseconds after our light pulse. And then here we have neurons that action potentials following a protocol of 5 millisecond, 5 hertz pulse for 30 seconds, turning on, 30 seconds off, repeated 3 times. So you can see that these neurons are following the light pulse. And then to confirm the location of all of our fiber optics, we did histology. These are tracks from the fiber optics coated with dye I, positioned above the PPT. And we did immunohistochemistry to confirm that the expression of our channel rhodopsin marked by YFP was in cholinergic neurons. So these data suggest that activation of the cholinergic neurons in the PPT is sufficient to induce REM sleep. And I mentioned earlier that there's some varying GABAergic hypotheses of REM sleep control that kind of discount the cholinergic role in this. And so these data suggest that these neurons are still important for REM sleep regulation, and we can't totally discount them. They're sufficient to be able to induce the transition to REM sleep. So I'm going to move on to non-REM sleep and how we're trying to induce non-REM sleep. So current treatments for sleep disorders also do not induce a normal non-REM sleep. And so I'm looking at the role of dexmedetomidine, which is an alpha-2A receptor agonist, as a possible non-REM sleep generation mechanism. And so why might we think that this drug over other drugs that are used for sedation — this one is used for sedation in the ICU currently — why would this one produce a state more similar to natural non-REM sleep versus other drugs like propofol, like Michael Jackson was trying to use? He probably chose the wrong drug. This one would have been a better option. So why is this? Because dexmedetomidine is thought to act to produce its loss of consciousness effect by decreasing norepinephrine release on, for example, the preoptic area. So it disinhibits the preoptic area, which allows the preoptic area to turn on and then inhibit the rest of the arousal pathways, similar to what happens in natural non-REM sleep. So we know from some human studies that people have looked at spindle activity with dexmedetomidine and compared that to spindles with normal sleep. And they find that the frequency content of the spindles is similar, but that dexmedetomidine extends the duration of spindle activity. And in rodents, we see that there's a progressive increase in slow wave activity with increasing concentrations of dexmedetomidine. And our goal was to compare these EEG properties in dex-induced sedation compared to non-REM sleep in the mouse model. So we're looking at slow wave activity, spindles, and arousability to see how does this state compare to natural non-REM sleep. So we have mice that were implanted with EEG and EMG electrodes and that were distributed across the whole entire brain so that you could look at different combinations of where are these signals coming from. And here's an example of a prefrontal electrode configuration showing an increase in slow wave activity as you progressively get to higher concentrations of the dexmedetomidine. And if we look at kind of the time domain here and the spectrogram, we have on the top panel of each of these is the spectrogram of the EEG, and then the lower panel is the absolute value of the EMG. So you can see muscle activity over time and the EEG power over time. And the red line indicates the injection time. So these animals got an IP injection of dexmedetomidine, or in the top panel, saline. And so being injected, it stimulates them. They're awake. So they stay awake for a while. And then you see an increase in delta power around an hour and 45 minutes into the recording. Whereas with the 50 microgram per kilogram dex, we don't have immediate onset, but we're making the animals more prone to go into a sleep-like state. So we get earlier onset non-REM sleep-like entering. With 100, 200, and 400, they're much higher concentrations, and so we get very rapid onset, loss of muscle tone, and increases in the delta power in the EEG. If we quantify the power in delta across time, we can see that in this red and blue trace, this is the red is saline and blue is the 50 micrograms per kilogram dex, that you get similar levels of delta power when the animal goes out, but an earlier onset with the 50. And it seems that we've reached kind of a plateau of how much slow wave activity we can get. We get a similar amount of slow wave activity with the 100, 200, and 400, but it lasts and persists for a longer period of time with the increasing concentrations. And we've quantified this here with the FFT and a KS test to determine that in the delta power frequency ranges for the 100, 400, and 200, you have an increase in delta power, whereas for the 50, you get a state that's very similar to naturally occurring non-REM sleep. And now we're also working on spindle quantification. And so here is a non-REM sleep after natural after a saline injection. And so we're filtering in the spindle band, which for rodents is a little bit lower. So we're filtering from 6 to 15 hertz. And then squaring the mean and plus 3 standard deviations to set a threshold to detect spindles. And then this shows a Hilbert transform to go back and find where the start and stop points of those spindles are. Now, during dex, this is 100 micrograms per kilogram dex. We did the same thing, and we get candidate spindle events. If anybody has any experience detecting spindles in rodents, I would love to talk to you further. We just came back from a meeting in Baltimore that's the sleep meeting, and there were lots of debates about how do you confirm that you're getting spindles in the mice. It's not nearly as clean as you see in humans. But we're working on quantifying this now, so we definitely see spindle activity with dex, and we're going to work to determine how do those properties differ in the mouse compared to natural non-REM sleep. And so we also wanted to see what is the effect of dex on the arousability. So unlike other general anesthetics, if you give the anesthetic, there's a clear period where they're out for very long periods of time and they're not arousable. One of the unique features of dex is that you can give it, they're sedated, but they're able to be aroused, and then they go back to sedation. And so here we see in the 50 microgram per kilogram condition that 0, they're out, and 1 probability, they're awake, and that this is increasing the amount of time that they're spending or shifting it earlier on in the recording in an unaroused state compared to the saline, but they're still arousable. And with the prolonged, with the higher concentrations, you have prolonged periods of time before they're arousable. So these data suggest that low concentrations of dex produce slow waves and spindles that are similar to non-REM sleep, whereas these higher concentrations of dex increase slow wave activity to a level that's greater than non-REM sleep. So what does this mean? Perhaps low concentrations of dex would be useful to produce a non-REM sleep-like state, or other drugs that act at alpha-2 adrenergic agonists could be developed that would be helpful for approximating non-REM sleep in humans. And at higher concentrations of dex, it seems that you get a profound state of loss of consciousness, and so currently it's used in the ICU. Maybe this would be another way of producing a general anesthesia-like state. So overall, we found that cholinergic neurons in the PPT are involved in this REM sleep generation, and that dexmedetomidine, or alpha-2 adrenergic agonists, might be good candidates to produce EEG properties that are similar to natural non-REM sleep. And so we're very interested in how do you control the sleep-wake states and try and get better understanding of the circuitry involved so that we can make better targets for reproducing natural sleep patterns in people who have sleep problems. And so I'd like to thank the people who helped make this possible, a number of my students, and Emery Brown and Matt Wilson, as well as our funding agencies. Thank you. Questions?
Interesting optogenetic data. I think you showed your recordings in the sense that the units started firing around 7 milliseconds after the light came on, which is quite a long delay for direct activation.
So I think that that's within the range of, if you see the rapid onset action potentials within 7 milliseconds, Ed can maybe speak to that. Did you hear? Yeah, how long it takes for action potentials to have direct effect after the light pulse starts.
Well, it depends on cell type to cell type. I mean, and also the light power. You can get action potentials very quickly, but what often happens is that the time constant decay, especially you might actually get doublets or triplets where you get multiple spikes. But I think that, on average in a ball of tissue, you might expect something like 5, 10 milliseconds.
Can you go back to your slide where you were showing the spectrum?
Yep.
Right. So it's kind of hard to see the scales there, but it looks like there's power all the way up to about 10 hertz.
Yes. And
I would call that delta, and I'm kind of curious why you did.
Well, so there is also delta power, but then we're working on analyzing that more carefully to see if there's resonance frequencies that we're picking up in these higher bands, or if that's something that's physiologically really happening. It shows in the spindle band that they're not shaped like spindles. It seems to be faster frequency power that's in that frequency band. We're open to suggestion as to, so why do we get this higher power also initially, and then it kind of consolidates down into a lower power band? We're not sure yet. Yep.
A very interesting observation that activating the cholinergic neurons can increase REM sleep. But have you considered a possibility that this may not be what's happening in real sleep, because you could be artificially jacking up the system and activating the cholinergic neurons, which activate on other cell types that could be really the drive for REM sleep under natural conditions?
Yep. So the single unit recordings of these neurons in cat show that they have an increase in firing just before transitions to REM sleep, suggesting that they're involved in the transition to REM sleep. And in this case, we're activating these neurons and getting REM sleep, which says that it's sufficient, but doesn't say that it's absolutely necessary. So it is possible there's these other GABAergic theories of REM sleep that say other, like the SLD, would be important for REM sleep generation. There's probably multiple mechanisms involved, and figuring out how those interact is one of the challenges for the future. Yep.
What happens if you induce too many REM sleeps in a normal
one? So we haven't looked at any behavioral consequences of our increase in REM sleep. One of the things we might do is have some kind of memory-dependent task and see if their performance improves or is impaired with increased REM sleep. If you follow the theory that REM sleep is important for consolidation of memory, perhaps they would improve their REM sleep or improve their performance on some task after enhancing their REM sleep. Yep.
Given the fact that chronic sleep deprivation has cognitive long-term effects, and in certain disorders such as Alzheimer's disease, cholinergic deficit, which can be corrected by cholinesterase inhibitors, therapeutic benefit. I wonder if that has any implications for your observation of cholinergic stimulation improving sleep, and whether that might have implications for the etiology of the cognitive decline that occurs.
Right, so sleep fragmentation and sleep disruption are some of the earliest signs of Alzheimer's. So there's definitely a relationship between sleep and the progression of Alzheimer's disease. Something that could be utilized to help, if you can improve the sleep of people who are prone going to be developing Alzheimer's, maybe you could slow the course of the disease.